Live Recap Edition. And Dominic, the breaking headline of the day. My senator, your senator, is a traitorous traitor. I'm talking about Ron Johnson. And we have evidence to support that point of view. We also have a fine guest right away. He is former U.S. attorney and current friend, we hope, James Santel. He is also a host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday, 9 to 11, right here on the network. James, Jimmy, welcome back, man.
Hey, Jim.
I'm glad to be with you this afternoon where America is talking about the confusion between USB drives and ginger men. So we know we're in good state.
Jim, I got to tell you, I'm a little stunned. I'm a little flummoxed even. I've always considered Ron Johnson to be, you know, a little country club cordial. And then I thought he got a little squirrely. Stop coming around, stop having him on the show. But I never realized that he wanted to personally deliver the evidence of fraud, the means of the coup, and want to personally deliver it to the vice president. Jim, does this sound like a crime to you, sir?
We have talked about this before. There's a thing called aiding and abetting, Section 2 in the federal code, that does, in fact, make it a crime to assist, to somehow encourage, support the furtherance of a crime. We hear this afternoon, I think for the first time, that Ron Johnson volunteered to get these false elector ballots from the state of Wisconsin, being flown from Wisconsin to the National Archives, to get them to Vice President, the Vice President's Chief of Staff saying, no, we're not accepting those. But that is an attempt. That is an attempt. And to the extent that we're looking overall at actions that would undermine the conduct of the government, that would tend to suggest there is fraud, he is a participant in it. I would be very concerned if I were him right now. I know he's already released an opinion, or a statement saying that he had very little, if anything, to do with this. But the reality is Wisconsin, through our senior senator, once again, in the middle of this conspiracy to undermine our electoral process.
Jim, as a former prosecutor, would you recommend that Ron Johnson get himself a good effing criminal defense attorney?
He should. He should. And the fact that he has been featured today so prominently in this pivotal role. It's one thing, I suppose, to put together these false elector statements, these ballots, if you will, which is fraudulent to begin with. We should chat more about the extent to which that was a crime. But the fact that you are now using them, taking them, and trying to facilitate the actual fraud on the vice president, on the process, to affect the government in this way, that places him right in the middle of this. And even though he was not successful, we know also from our previous conversations that mere success in accomplishing your bad, your criminal end, does not mean you have not engaged in criminal conduct.
Well, yeah, that's why attempted murder is a crime, just like murder is a crime. James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Let's throw out what Johnson's...
Is there an attempted coup charge we could level against Johnson?
I think so. Ron Johnson's press secretary, Alexa Hemming, wrote in a tweet this afternoon, "The senator had no involvement in the creation of an alternative slate of electors and had no foreknowledge that it was going to be delivered to our office. This was a staff-to-staff exchange. His new chief of staff contacted the vice president's office." But as the journalist writes at the Washington Post, Matthew Brown, he points out that Henning, Johnson's press secretary, did not contest the authenticity of the text messages, saying instead that Johnson was not involved in the creation of the fake elector certificates themselves. Henning's statement does not contest the committee's core claim, which is that Johnson lobbied the vice president to accept faked elector certificates in an effort to subvert the 2020 election. We're seeing some of this, Jim. I heard the former president talk about a speech he gave over the weekend saying, well, you know, I thought the election was stolen. And we see how this kind of like vague defense is being laid out by some of these coup insurrectionist bastards. Jim, do you think that's going to help their case at all?
And there are two forums for all this, right? There's the forum of the public out there, and they're telling this amazing story. It gets more granular, more specific day after day, from Tuesday, Thursday of last week, now today. So in that context, yes, this is selling, I think, exceptionally well. And by means selling, I mean its impact is very, very strong. And secondarily, to the extent that this statement, this tweet from the senator's office, once again, an attempt to distance yourself, what does that mean? You know that it's wrong, right? You know that the thing that you are trying to distance yourself is wrong. I would also offer it, again, it may not be a criminal law principle, but, you know, when you're in a supervisory position and your staff engages on your behalf and does something on your behalf, you're responsible for that, right? And so even if that's not a criminal basis for pursuing you, many, many things wrong, and Ron Johnson not getting out from under this publicly. And then again, depending upon what the committee's specific evidence about this is, I mean, the evidence in the presentation this afternoon was not a staffer did this. This was not without the senator's knowledge. This was Ron Johnson. And so, again, if I were Ron Johnson right now, I would be very concerned. And yes, it would be a good thing to get counsel if he hasn't already retained someone.
James Hentel, Andrew Hitt, the former Republican Party chair of the state of Wisconsin, was also featured, I believe, through video testimony. I was listening on the radio, Jim. But what do you think about Hitt's statement? Fancy Brian, going to need your help here. Let's play it quickly for our guest and also the audience. I believe it's got five. Andrew Hitt from the hearing earlier today.
I was told that these would only count if a court ruled in our favor. So that would have been using our electors, but would have been using our electors in ways that we weren't told about, and we wouldn't have supported.
Jim, do you buy any part of that? That they were, no. You know, just pawns and were only going along if things went their way in the courts? Well, every legal avenue had been closed, including the state Supreme Court, on the very day, an hour before they cast these fraudulent votes. So do you believe Andrew Hitt?
The answer is absolutely not. And again, it's a very nice excuse after the fact. They may have been told that, but let's go back and think about who he is. And even this other elector who was also on the screen right before that, who spoke about himself as being a useful idiot. And yes, he was angry that he was being put out there. But let's think about this. Once again, it fundamentally reveals a lack of understanding about basic civics. We're not talking about some refined federal law that only lawyers can appreciate. We're talking, as you just said, about the fundamental ways in which we elect a president. And for Andrew Hitt to get out there and say, well, basically the lawyers told me this was okay. Let's think of another example. Suppose Dom comes to me and says to me, Jim, you know, Mike owns this station. He wants you to sign all these contracts on his behalf for services and products. But don't worry. They're only effective if, in fact, all of Mike's real contracts fall apart. Am I going to look at that and say, sure, let me sign? Of course not.
You haven't signed the contracts yet, Jim?
Nor has Dom come to me and asked me to do that. But it underscores, once again, this fundamental supposed, which I do not buy, I don't think you buy either, a lack of basic understanding about civics. And secondarily, you know, there's this fundamental concept in the law generally, and certainly in government operations, of common sense. If a lawyer, whoever it is, comes to you and says, I'm going to ask you to do something, and your instincts should tell you, Andrew Hitt, and frankly, all these other people too, they're not stupid, they're not unsophisticated. Well, if the lawyer says it, I guess it's okay. Nope, I'm sorry, I do not buy that. And again, Andrew Hitt's attempt to blame the lawyers and blame the people who told them that this was only conditional. Where is that in the documents? Where is that in the history of this case, as you just indicated? The timing of this certainly does not support that very nice and very convenient after-the-fact theory that we today saw on the national screen.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We are recapping some of the prior J6 testimony. We've got a fine guest. He is former U.S. attorney and our good friend, James Hentel. Jim, today's J6 hearing was about the pressure on state officials. And obviously, Republicans really didn't control the mechanism of counting the vote in the state of Wisconsin, but they did in Georgia. And we heard again the former president, I just need you to find me 11,780 votes. Jim, if you heard that testimony as it was laid out by the J6 hearing today, it seemed damning in real time. I mean, we found out back in real time, damn near, But it seems very damning today as well.
Right. Absolutely. Again, we knew a lot of those specific details, but to put it together in the context of today's theory was a theme, if you will, was basically to leave Washington, D.C. and see what part of this overall structure, this overall Eastman plan now involved places like Arizona and Georgia. So we got Brad Raffensperger, again, very, very compelling, very, very straightforward, saying in no uncertain terms, there was no there. The election in Georgia was proper. All these allegations about dead people and people are not registered, completely untrue. He tells the president that that is the case. So once again, we've got that affirmation of knowledge inside Donald Trump and everyone who's listening to him. The COO, Mr. Sterling, likewise saying nothing about this process was fraudulent. We're letting the president know that, and no, we're not going to go along with his plan to find these additional votes. The repeat of the conversation and the excerpts from what was an overly extenuated conversation here between the president and Raffensperger, I think they said it was an hour and 10, 15 minutes or so, but these key features, you see plainly the president getting angry when Raffensperger will not, in fact, do what he wants him to do. Raffensperger is pushing back on this. And in the end, they don't hang up on each other, but there's a threat there. There's a threat of criminal behavior, criminal exposure. Everything about this is classic Donald Trump. And it parallels, if you will, what they did last Thursday, which is talk about this meeting on January 4th.
James, hold that thought. James Santel, our fine guest. More Devil's Advocates. We'll bring him right back. You come right back.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
Was that wrong? Should I?
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Former U.S. attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates, James Santel, sticking around. Jim, thank you for joining us once again. What a day of testimony. The J6 hearings today. One of the people that really struck me, which I was actually surprised by, you know, I kind of come into these things with my own thoughts about who people are and how they are. But Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers, I thought, had some extremely compelling testimony in that. I mean, not only from where he came from, explaining how this impacted him and how he, you know, went to his space to try to figure out how to handle this, but the fact that, you know, Rudy Giuliani and the Trump campaign, they knew that this was wrong, that this was illegal, that this was not going to work, yet they continued to do it every way. We have some sound of that, Crudy?
We do. All right. We can play a little of the Rusty Bowers, give the audience a flavor if they weren't able to listen in. Fancy Brian, if you'd be so kind, play the Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers, cut 27, please.
Anywhere, anyone, anytime has said that I said the election was rigged, that would not be true.
One more, at least, cut 28, please.
You are asking me to do something against my oath, and I will not break my oath.
And one more, cut 29, Arizona Speaker Rusty Bowers.
He said, we've got lots of theories, we just don't have the evidence.
Lots of theories and no evidence. And that first cut, Jim, was Rusty Bowers describing the phone call and, you know, his testimony as to the contents of that call compared to what Trump has said. Obviously, there's some conflict in what the reality was there. And if I'm going to have two people in front of me telling me stories, honestly, Jim, Bowers comes off as extremely credible. What's your take?
Absolutely. And again, if this were a court of law, you'd look at the two of them and you'd say, who is the more credible? Even if it is, as many of the commentators are saying, this is he said, it is not just that. And note, too, how wise the committee was. This complete refutation of what Donald Trump has said almost started the entire 2.5-hour presentation today. Right off the bat, Rusty Bowers comes in and says, that conversation. I had a conversation, but that is not the content of the conversation. It was just the opposite. And so right from the start, we get this clear exposition that what Donald Trump is saying to you, America, is a lie. Donald Trump, even before the hearing today, tweeted about people being rhinos and the election was rigged and I won Arizona. And I have to wonder if even that decision to start out with this complete in-your-face rejection of what Donald Trump has said was very purposeful. The second portion of it, which again, very, very compelling, Rusty Bowers bringing his faith into this, talking about how, again, many people will agree and disagree with this, but the Constitution is divinely inspired. I have an oath. I've got an oath to something that's greater than me. And this man was forcing me to violate my oath. And I would say arguably even go beyond. He talked about his time beyond his time on earth here and having to answer for what he is doing. I will tell you, for those people who are out there, whether you are religious or not, spiritual or not, that is very, very compelling testimony. And Donald Trump, don't you dare mess with my soul, is what he's saying. And so I would offer that, frankly, Rusty Bowers, at the start of this, invoking this spirituality, and yes, indeed, at the very end, Lady Ruby is saying, God will make your name great, but not this way. We've got a spiritual to this today. And very, very thoughtful by the committee to bookend that attractive approach on this.
Jim, also testimony from Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel. I'll quote here from the
Didn't
Washington Post.
Didn't she used to be a Romney?
She doesn't say that much these days. Said that Trump, Donald Trump, President Trump at the time, on a conference call, introduced Eastman to talk about having fake electors in place as a contingency. And her testimony, quote, essentially, he turned the call over to Mr. Eastman, who then proceeded to talk about the importance of the RNC helping the campaign gather these contingent electors, as they call them. I call them fraudulent. In case of any of the legal challenges that were ongoing, change the result of any of the states. Again, kind of the same defense or, you know, discussion talking point that Ron Johnson's office put out today. Does that shield them in any way in your position, number one, Jim? And number two, does this testimony by the RNC chairwoman implicate Trump even further about knowing about this plot and being a part of it?
Right. And so as to that second point, absolutely right. Once again, and it's also important that she is inside the RNC. So many of these witnesses today, these are not the liberal Democrats who are coming here to hurl a political mess in Donald Trump's direction or John Eastman's direction or Rudy Giuliani's.
Hey, man, who's calling our fine guest during the show? Jim, put him on. Just send him straight to voicemail, man. Finish your thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other piece of this, of course, remember that Eastman is the same fellow who, again, a few weeks later, as we learned last week, in the Oval Office, acknowledges that this entire plan violated the Electoral Count Act. He says, I'm here to request that you reject the electors. And he acknowledges to the president, as he did not acknowledge to the RNC folks, that this is all fraud and that this argument would fail if it goes forward. He's not afraid to do that. All of this goes to intent. It goes to purpose. It goes to design. You're saying one thing simply for the purpose of encouraging people to engage in conduct that you know is illegal. That's obstruction. That puts you, again, right in the middle of this overall attempt to undermine the basic processes of government electing a president.
Jim, you got one more segment for us, man? I got a few more questions for you.
Absolutely.
Including absolutely. This one, Jim. I know it's off the January 6th topic, but the Wisconsin Christmas Parade suspect, Daryl Brooks, has changed his plea. He is now pleading not guilty by mental disease or defect. That, of course, the Waukesha Parade tragedy, and Brooks is the alleged. But I'd like to get your opinion on that defense. Will it be effective? Can it be effective? Jim, and I suspect my little buddy's got more to ask you about the J6 as well, and perhaps even our traitorous U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I hope Ron's got an effing great criminal defense attorney. More of our fine guest, James Santel, more Devil's Advocates. Come right back with us. We'll be right back.
staffer stated that Senator Johnson wished to hand deliver to the vice president the fake electors' votes from Michigan and Wisconsin.
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that?
I can tell you that I plead the fifth.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Lock her up, lock her up.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates, the live J6 postgame party. We got to find former U.S. attorney as our guest. James Santel is the man. Jim, I was 52 years, 1 week, 2 days, 13 hours and 9 minutes old when I found out my U.S. senator was a traitor to the Constitution, to democracy, to his oath of office. But, you know, there's more to talk about than treacherous, traitorous Ron Johnson. Jim, do you think the American people are being moved by this? I like these January 6 hearings far better than, let's say, the impeachment, because there's not Republicans breaking the flow and inserting malfeasant and false information in real time. You get to see the whole case played out, not in 5 minute, you know, skip every 5 minute increments. Jim, do you think this is moving the needle?
I do. And for anybody who's watching even bits and pieces of it, you would have to come away, if you watch a 20-minute segment here or there, you have to come away with these special messages that are repeated over and over again, which is, again, no big lie. The president knew about this. The president was told about it repeatedly. And then all of these efforts with that knowledge to reach out, both internal to the White House, to the Department of Justice, folks in Washington, D.C., the vice president, and then also beyond Washington, into Arizona, into Wisconsin, into Georgia, this effort to do exactly what you know is wrong, but in an attempt to get the election in your favor. That's the message that comes through at bottom line from each one of these witnesses. And you don't have to sit there and watch it for 2.5 hours, as most of the rest of us did today, to get that message. You also have some very, as we talked before the break, you've got some very compelling witnesses here. They're government officials. They're normal people. They're poll workers who found themselves victimized by this president. In many ways, that too would be a part of a sentencing hearing, if you will, a victim impact statement. When Lady Ruby and Shave Moss are describing the impact of what the president did by identifying their supposedly illegal activities, and that's also hugely impactful. What does it show? It shows an intent. It shows an intent to hit other people, to affect other people, without any care for them, and only to benefit him. I do think it's hitting, yes.
Jim, you brought up Lady Ruby and her daughter, and I think for me, that was some of the most compelling testimony that I heard. You know, these other folks, you know, you kind of signed up. You know, if you're Braffin's perjurer or his deputy, you know, this is what you do, and you're going to get some slack and whatever. But if you're just you know, volunteering, you know, trying to do something good, as a 60-some-year-old grandmother coming in to volunteer her time during a pandemic, I didn't do that, Jim. I didn't want to go anywhere near polling stations or anywhere where there's lots of people in the middle of a pandemic.
No, but you left that to me, but go ahead.
Yeah. But she went in, and I know, Fantasy Brian, you pulled the sound. I just want to play it for the audience, Jim, and get your take. I thought, for many reasons, this was extremely compelling. Let me just a little backstory here today. Earlier, I was at a Women of Influence awards ceremony. Our pal Maggie Dawn won an award as a Woman of Influence here in Milwaukee from the local community here. And to hear some of the stories of the other winners and as women, what they go through in their professional lives and trying to, you know, to be the best they can be and how they went through and got to where they are, it is entirely different for women in this world, certainly, than it is for men, especially white men. And we have, in this circumstance, two African-American women volunteering, or at least one volunteering, perhaps the daughter was being paid, but going out and doing this work for the community, to engage in their civic duty, and then to be personally attacked by the white male president of the United States. It was just such outrageous behavior for me, Jim. If you would bear with me, Brian, if we would play that cut, I believe it's number 8.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you. The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one. But he targeted me, Lady Rudy, a small business owner, a mother, a proud American citizen who stand up to help Fulton County run an election in the middle of the pandemic.
Jim, I applaud Lady Ruby and all the other volunteers and poll workers that you know, do that kind of work, that are now, just because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, to be attacked by this president. And my concern ultimately, beyond for their immediate safety, is for the our electoral system. I mean, if this is how people are going to be received and attacked by the losing party, who in the hell would want to go and engage and be a poll worker, Jim?
Right, exactly. And that we talked about this before, right? That's the deterrent impact upon this. I volunteer every polling, every election to do just this, and I'm not dissuaded from doing that by this. But an awful lot of people look at this and say, you know what? I could be Shade Moss. I could be Lady Ruby. I was just doing my duty as well. And if I happen to be on some videotape and someone gets a hold of it, and I am passing, as I said, probably a little bit tongue-in-cheek at the start of our time together, I'm passing a ginger mint, and in fact, somebody looks at that and says, no, you're passing a USB drive, and you're engaging in election fraud, and misconstrues all the things that are in this visual presentation of what I was doing legitimately on behalf of my community. I'm going to think twice. I'm going to think three times about going down that road. Why do I need that kind of not only response, but now, as we learn, harassment, threats of physical harm, being obliged through the direction of the FBI to stay away from your home. Why? Because you're engaging in public service. This goes far beyond simple advocacy about who won or who lost an election and the legitimate processes by which we get there. This is going to the very focus of how we elect people. It depends fundamentally upon human beings coming forward. Yes, volunteering, maybe getting paid from time to time, not inappropriately for doing their service, but doing what we necessarily have to get done. It sends a very chilling message. Again, the shame of this, that should be on the president and other people, is profound. I suspect it will not hit as it would any other normal human being.
Jim Centell, our fine guest, I was checking out our competition, turned her down to Righty Whitey Talk Radio. And as fate would have it, the same host plays in both Milwaukee and Madison, as both Dom and I do. And I was listening to her guest, Cleta Mitchell. Cleta Mitchell was the guest, the counter programming to the J6. And they were selling spots, or at least encouraging people to come out to the big event being led by Cleta Mitchell on the 24th. And apparently Ron Johnson is the speaker of honor on Friday, the newly exposed traitorous senator from the state of Wisconsin. But they're going to train people, they said. They're going to train people how to run elections and how to monitor elections. And this is their newest, you know, effort, you know, because we can't let happen what happened the last time. But here's my question. When you've got a broadcast outlet and they continue to propagate the big lie, and this isn't a cable news outlet, Jim, this is, you know, FCC regulated broadcast media. When they're out there literally lying to the American public, lying and promoting the big lie, and they were going to follow that up with some anti-vaxxer conversation later in the show. But Jim, you know, am I misplaced in feeling aggrieved as a broadcaster when my competitors are airing that kind of, let's call it BS?
Not at all. And again, I believe your license, their license, subject to review by the FCC, right? And comments by the community, and this kind of thing should be a part of that, not only immediately, but whenever licenses come up to do that. That's the process for doing this. And beyond just that sense of being aggrieved that you legitimately feel, Mike, the other part of this, of course, is that, you know, what is the authority to do this? When you are engaging, when you are a poll worker, there are folks who are, there are city clerks, there are county clerks who are doing this work. And it is a governmental function. It is nonpartisan. It's nonpolitical. And they are the ones who are responsible for recruiting the poll workers, for doing the training, for doing the processing of how elections work in America. That is the rule across the nation. So I wonder out loud. Now you can do training of election observers. That's a different sort of thing. But are we talking now about getting people in positions of true responsibility, like me and others, when we quite literally have people coming in and voting, so that you can do something inside the system to affect the ultimate result? I certainly hope not. If you are in fact doing that, you're engaging the same kind of anti-government, and I would argue arguably criminal behavior that undermines our elections. So it is dangerous. It is dangerous. And it's one thing to promote voting. It's one thing to encourage people to volunteer at their polling places and doing apolitical, nonpartisan things. It's another thing to be motivated because you think that there was a big steal of the election, which is not true, as you said, and all of this premised upon a fundamentally, as we heard again today, a fundamentally completely unsupported view about recent American history. It's dangerous, it's scary, and it should be condemned.
Well, it's only Cleta Mitchell's eighth such seminar here in the state of Wisconsin, Jim, so I'm sure nothing to worry about. I wanted to turn our attention to the U.S. Supreme Court. A ruling came down today on choice schools. And, yeah. Jim, I think this is a question I've asked before. How is it that we, the state taxpayers, with the separation of church and state, can pay for students to attend church schools effectively? And the U.S. Supreme Court said, well, because it's constitutional, of course. Jim, were you surprised by the ruling?
I was not surprised by it, only because it's consistent with what the Supreme Court has done. About a year or so ago, a case out of Montana had to do with scholarships. They likewise favored the religious folks who wanted to partake of a publicly supported scholarship program. So here today, Carson versus Macon, we're in the state of Maine. Maine permits parents of students in areas where there are not public schools to enroll their students in private schools using government funds. And that's okay. But the only prohibition on that that Maine established was it can't be a religious school, because that, according to Maine, and I think according to many, many people, would be in violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, right? Government should not be affirmatively supporting religion. Today, a majority of the Supreme Court said, nope, that's just fine. And to do the opposite would be discriminating against those religious schools and those families, and that this is their free exercise clause. And so, as Justice Breyer, who will not be on the court much longer, said, we're placing primacy on the exercise clause as opposed to the establishment clause, and we're coming out in favor of religion. It's consistent with what the Supreme Court has done recently. There's another case out there. It's going to come out very soon, maybe Thursday, maybe next week. This is the football coach who's praying. My strong sense is, once again, the exercise clause and his capacity, his ability to pray publicly in a school setting, admittedly in a football game right after it, is probably going to take precedence over the establishment of that prayer inside an academic setting, admittedly a football game. I think we're going to see this again as soon as next week. It is the trend of the United States Supreme Court these days.
Jim, I had at least one final question. Darryl Brooks Jr., the Waukesha assailant, is now claiming not guilty by mental disease or defect. I didn't think you could just claim that.
You can't. And so the answer is there's a whole lot more. You simply can't say I am insane, sort of in the colloquial way of saying that. You've got to establish that. Plainly, there's got to be evidence to do that. The judge can take evidence based upon psychiatric examinations. There can be a contest about that, a hearing about that, and all the other things that surround this. What have you said since the time of the horrific event in downtown Waukesha, right down the street from you? What other things about your life would suggest that you, and here's the standard, you do not appreciate the nature of the charges against you, and second, you cannot assist in your own defense? That's a pretty high standard. So simply invoking it doesn't mean you get it. It's finally a judicial determination. We're not there yet with respect to Mr. Brooks.
Our fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney. Jim, thank you so much for coming around. You know, I was really just trying to help build a defense for Rojo.
Thanks, Jim.
We'll keep working on that and other things. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon, gentlemen. Take care.
Thanks, man.
More Devils. We'll be back.
I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated.
I wish you weren't a liar.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
I just want you to know I hate you.